Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. From the University of California, Davis, an article published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, both sucrose and high fructose corn syrup are linked to increased health risks. I talked about fructose earlier in the week. Also today, from the University of Alabama, an article published in the American Journal of Heart Association, consuming a Mediterranean diet is associated with a lower risk of sudden cardiac death during a 10-year period. That could save a lot of lives. Also, aging. Dietary supplementation with green tea catechins and cacao, which is chocolate flavanols. And that can also slow down the aging process. This is by two different institutes. I'll get to that later. And how the mind sharpens the senses, Ruhr University in Germany. And also today, antibiotics increase the risk of colon cancer, Umeå University in Sweden. That's not good. But good news from the Perlmutter Cancer Center in New York University, high-dose vitamin C may stop the progression of leukemia. Again, easy, inexpensive, and life-saving. And this was a big deal study. But also today, I'm going to play some clips. And one is from a news service that is the only one that I've seen thus far that reported on a very important study showing that those who are vaccinated are very susceptible to the new Delta variant and with worse reactions. But what about those who've had COVID of all ages? Well, you now have a really strong natural immunity. How strong? Almost unbelievable. Why isn't everyone aware that getting COVID, if you're healthy, certainly not people with comorbidities, actually is protecting you? All the science is there, but that's not being shared. Vaccinate everyone. Punish anyone who's not. That's the message. We'll show you official documentation to the contrary. Also, we didn't have a chance for Michael Caine to do a two-minute reciting of Rudyard Kipling's If. Also, we're going to hear from Dr. Michael Yeadon today talking about COVID and what we should know. And he is being interviewed by a whole panel of international lawyers, including Dr. Reimer Fulmich at Nuremberg II Tribunal. So hear what he has to say. And also I'm going to open first with this, then we'll go to health nutrition. As we know, there's really draconian, if not totalitarian, principles in place in New South Wales, Australia, in fact, all over Australia. They actually have enlisted the armed forces to make sure that you don't get out of your house. You have to be monitored. You have to have permission. You can only go within 2 miles, and you can only go for specific reasons. You're forbidden to talk to your neighbors. Yes, even members of your own family, depending upon how many there are. And it's really severe. Has that lessened the spread of COVID? Oh, no, it hasn't. Everything they're doing has failed. And yet they're really punishing people. I played some video last week where the police were just beating to a pulp peaceful protesters. And as one person was being led away, and you can watch this, go to prn.fm, scroll down, you'll see Gary's notes, and you'll watch this. But there, this person is saying, what law have I broken? They didn't mention a law. They're enforcing everything under police state mandate. Arresting someone for walking, arresting some people for just sitting watching a sunset, not around other people, not infecting anyone, just themselves. That's a police state. Now the people are beginning to protest and fight back. Truckers in particular, they're holding a national strike. We'll let you know about that. But the prime minister or the premier of New South Wales has been really tough. I mean, if you imagine Jean Kirkpatrick, Hillary Clinton, Margaret Thatcher, and Madeleine Albright all in one. That's what she's like. So we're going to play a little parody clip of some very clever editing. Watch it. It's a hoot. I just saw it this morning. So we're going to start with that. And then we're going to do your calls. And also we have some really dynamic programming coming up on Tuesday night. I had gotten a lot of questions about glyphosate and Roundup and why is it still being used? Haven't they settled tens of thousands of lawsuits? Haven't they been found guilty? Yeah, they have. And yet it hasn't been banned by our FDA and USDA or anywhere around the world, except Mexico has banned it. Good for Mexico. So I brought America's leading authority on glyphosate on. She'll be here for an hour. And that is an MIT professor who's published dozens and dozens of papers on the topic. So everything about Monsanto and genetically engineered foods and why they're not safe will be Tuesday night's Progressive Commentary Hour. Now, a lot of people don't play programs on Monday. They take holidays. I don't. So Monday, Dr. Cole, really powerful. He is one of the best speakers there is. He has multiple board certifications, I believe four. He's one of America's leading pathologists. He is a professor. He treats patients. And I'm going to be asking him just questions that you, the audience, have asked. Now, you can put your questions up today by going to prnstudio@gmail.com, prnstudio@gmail.com. Write out your question, anything dealing with COVID, because he's one of the top 10 experts in America on it. All right? So a whole hour devoted Monday for those who are aware and listening to that program. So before we go any further into health and healing and helping you prevent some disease and live a longer life, let's now hear a little different edition of what the Premier of New South Wales has to say.
Hearing people saying, I don't know how to do my job properly. And I think that's really mean. I remember being criticised. Just remind everybody how criticised I was. That's not acceptable. I hope everybody likes staying at home because we are going to go into lockdown forever. Nobody from New South Wales is going anywhere. We will have 2 million police officers standing at the corner of every street to monitor every single citizen. We're really watching very closely. I hope this really will be devastating. We don't like to be heavy-handed, but what we need to say today now is that if you leave home, we will give you a death sentence. Please know that you will be shot in the face, and I hope it's painful. You are required to obey what we say when we say it, and if you don't, you can prepare to die. I've said from the outset, I don't care about your life and the life of those around you. I don't really give a shit. The government is now about to announce what we call the final solution. We are inspired by history and realise we can very easily permanently get rid of anybody thinking illegal thoughts. We aim to have absolutely zero freedom. Follow the rules or else you'll never be seen again. If you think you can live freely under our very strict and harsh regime, I have news for you. If you even consider breaking the rules, I will personally stab you in the head and rip your guts out. We have 24 hours surveillance of every single person in the community. We want to cause anguish, hurt and suffering to as many citizens as possible. Every day at 11 o'clock, every citizen in this state must listen to me. This is the Fourth Reich, and I will make sure that I never, ever, ever give up power till the day I die.
Whoa. Oh, I hope that goes viral. I really do. Hey, we've got some creative people in this audience who know how to do creative editing. Why don't you do some of them based upon these idiots in Congress? Oh, I mean, all of Congress, because they're all idiots. And how about all the other people in the media and all these talking heads on MSNBC and all these other stations? We should do more of that. Now to the latest on health and healing. We know, and it's common sense that the amount of calories going into our body from sugars and fats and refined carbohydrates is causing a real pandemic and has caused far more death and destruction around the world and in the United States than any virus has. And yet we don't pay a single bit of attention. There's not a single warning out there. What does that tell you? Because we know how the pandemic of our food supply and the quality of our food has impacted us. Diabetes, heart disease, cancers. There's abundant science. It's not confusing. And you don't have to take a special test to figure out that you're morbidly obese. But we don't pay attention to those million plus deaths per year. Anywhere between 1.3 and 1.5 million Americans die every year. Sucrose, that's that white sugar that we consume each day, now up to about 40 teaspoons. That's considered the more natural form of sugar. But it's just as bad for your health as consuming high fructose corn syrup, according to a University of California study. Quote, this is the first dietary intervention study to show that consumption of both sucrose and high fructose corn syrup beverages increase liver fat and decrease insulin sensitivity. People often have a skewed perception of aspartame and give sucrose a pass, but this study suggests that consumers should be equally concerned about both added sugars, the artificial sweetener, into our food supply. People were 18 to 40 years of age, and they were assigned different groups, and everything was tested on them, and they found out that when you're eating this sugar in this double-blind study, you end up really putting your health at risk. So just be aware, all of these processed sugars are all of them are unhealthy. But something very healthy, according to the University of Alabama, published in the latest issue a month ago, Journal of the American Heart Association, is going towards greater sudden cardiac death. And then what can we do to reverse it? Their advice, adhere to the Mediterranean diet. During a 9.8 years of follow-up, they found a substantial improvement in cardiovascular health and lessened the sudden death rate. Now, just so you understand, sudden cardiac death is defined by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, and they're the ones sponsoring this panel. It's an unexpected death without obvious extra cardiac cause occurring within a rapid witness collapse. I mean, you're there and then one moment, boom, you're gone. Happens every hour. And generally, if you have no symptoms at all and you died within that hour, that's what they call it. So there's a lot of people dying from this. And then they took a look, a more careful look. And they found that the added fats, the fried foods, the eggs, the organ meats, the processed meats, all this, the sugar, sweetened beverages, all of that contributes to that disease and death. How many commercials for food have you watched where you talk about getting all the meats in there, and then you start seeing that for no other reason than what is known as product differentiation, meaning our product is better because you just got a hamburger. We're giving you eggs. Someone else says, hold on a second. We got you beat. We put onion rings. All right, well, we put bacon on top of the onion rings, on top of the eggs, and on top of the hamburger. Oh, okay, well, then we'll put another hamburger on top of that. And then one clever company out there, a major corporation, instead of having a bun, we're not just going to give you two buns, we're going to give you two glazed donuts. Yeah, true story. And so people think, yeah, that's what I want. It's not expensive and it's quick. The consequences are irrelevant to the people selling you the product. Profits are. So isn't it interesting how we're all focused on one pandemic and what we must do and it's not working, and we completely avoid the pandemic that is self-inflicted. And yet, they cross over because who are the people most likely to die? End up in a hospital with critical care, those with comorbidities, diabetes, heart disease, obesity, the very things the one pandemic causes. But what information has the Surgeon General or Anthony Fauci told you about? Let's stop one pandemic in order to deal with another epidemic. Well, there hasn't. So just ask yourself, why not? Why not? What would happen if we had to take a look at all the products advertised on television or radio or in print that were making a product that when ingested actually causes disease, a known cause of disease, well, they wouldn't be able to do it. You'd be impacting thousands of manufacturers and all the people they rely upon to come up with clever ways of selling you something without you understanding how serious it is. Just letting you know, all this stuff that you're eating, not this audience necessarily, but the average person, it increases sudden cardiac death. Okay. Good news, cacao, or chocolate, reduced age-related conditions, increased the proportion of neuroprotective microglial phenotypes. In lay language, this is from a major research institute in Spain. When you take in green tea and the specific chemicals in green tea called catechins, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-N-S, and you at the same time took a piece of chocolate, hopefully organic chocolate, around 70%. The reason why is you start getting up around 90%, you could be getting a lot of caffeine. It's very bitter. But if you take it around 70, it's got the power to help and heal, but make sure it has no dairy in it and all the other chemicals and artificial sweeteners. So there's lots of healthy chocolate out there. Well, that helps protect your neuromuscular system. That's just good all the way around. Okay, something that can help with the aging process. And finally, from Rohr University in Germany, a study conducted with experienced scholars of Zen meditation shows that mental focusing can reduce learning mechanisms, induce learning mechanisms, similar to physical training. And that's what they did. This phenomena came about by a group of scientists monitoring meditation at a retreat. This was published in the highly respected journal Scientific Reports from the makers of Nature. And now it's showing it really impacts our brain. So what does it really mean? The participants were all Zen scholars with many years of meditation practice. They were scientifically escorted during a four-day Zen retreat in the spiritual center that is in one of these retreats in Germany. The retreat was held in complete silence with at least 8 hours of meditation per day. All participants practiced their familiar meditation, which is characterized by a non-specific monitoring of thoughts and surroundings, meaning you're simply present. So when you're looking at the ocean, you're looking at a beautiful scene of nature, you're looking at the simplicity of the design of a flower or field of gorgeous wildflowers, you're simply present. Meaning you're not thinking, you're not calculating, you're not trying to distract yourself. You're not allowing distracting thoughts. Mastering that allows you an enormous gift, the gift of concentration and focus, like a laser focus. These people were so focused they could hear their heart beating. They become aware of this. So just be aware that you can take meditation to a level, if you choose to, that is a matter of touching quantitatively the deeper part of your being. And that's where you can create positive solutions when you come out of these states. And you can train your body. You can actually impact your DNA. So just a very good study. And by the way, for those of you who've been using antibiotics a lot, be careful. Because there's a clear link, according to Umeå University in Sweden, between taking antibiotics and an increased risk of developing colon cancer within the next 5 to 10 years. And that was confirmed after a study of 40,000 cancer cases. So the impact of antibiotics on the intestinal microbiome is thought to lie behind the increased risk of cancer. But think what happens when you have chemotherapy. You can obliterate all your positive bacteria in the body, making yourself extremely susceptible to just common infections. So that's important. So why is it that we now have good evidence from the Perlmutter Cancer Center at New York University for stopping the progression of leukemia. This is exciting new research, shows that a six-month regimen of high-dose intravenous vitamin C slowed the progression of leukemia by stopping leukemic cells from multiplying. Now, the study builds upon research that demonstrated vitamin C's potential to inhibit and even kill cancer cells without harming healthy tissues. Now, we know that vitamin C stimulates a vital cancer-fighting enzyme. In leukemia, white blood cells fail to mature, so they regenerate themselves and multiply uncontrollably, a process that stops the body from producing the mature white blood cells needed by the immune system to fight infections. And researchers have discovered that a gene mutation plays a major role in the development of many cases of leukemia. 50% of patients with chronic leukemia, 30% of the patients with pre-leukemia, and 10% of acute myeloid leukemia have a genetic disorder that decreases the amount of TET2. That's a vital enzyme that helps undifferentiated cells mature into normal blood cells. Along comes vitamin C at high doses, and it helps restore the TET2 function, causing faulty stem cells in bone marrow to die off. The vitamin C produced results when it was used on human leukemia cells carrying the TET2 mutation, and it also stopped the growth of transplanted leukemia cancer stem cells in mice that had been genetically engineered to lack TET2. The vitamin achieved this effect by promoting DNA demyelinization or demethylization in the cancerous cells. And researchers also found that combining vitamin C was a major benefit with some other elements. But the main part of the story was vitamin C. In fact, the vitamin C has outperformed approved clinical and experimental drugs. And this was in a peer-reviewed journal. So why aren't we knowing about this? When vitamin C outperforms 7 different drugs, then you would think that that would get our attention. But it's not being promoted. In fact, in one study, vitamin C was 1,000 times, that's right, 1,000 times more effective in combating cancer stem cells than 2 DG and an experimental pharmaceutical drug. How many people, thousands upon thousands, I'm sure many from this audience remember the Tri-State Healing Center, where all the medical team, 22 board-certified physicians and nurses, nurse practitioners, and dentists like Dr. Amar Gadol, every day we would go over the protocols, and I established the protocols, and we would see people with end-stage diseases 3 months, 6 months, a year later. What improvement, or completely cured. And vitamin C intravenous therapy was at the heart of that, along with other therapies. But nobody paid attention. Why, I don't know. It wasn't secret. We had an open-door policy. So don't assume just because something is better, everyone's going to rush out there and try to become aware of it. They're not. Oh, and by the way, we had Dr. Robert Malone on. Very interesting person. He is the inventor of the RNA technology. And he now says, quote, "My gravest concerns on universal vaccination injections and injunctions and is about what he calls the emerging evidence of antibody-dependent enhancement, an adverse event typical of previous coronavirus vaccines in which the disease is made worse by vaccination. Another is the, quote, horizontal integration of big pharma, big tech, governments, and the corporate media that undermines such evidence and hushes such concerns further than what it has been." Also, he's very concerned about the Israeli data and the UK data, because all the people who were supposed to be vaccinated, especially senior citizens, have been. They've gotten 2 vaccines. And that gave them a green card and access. Now those are the ones most susceptible to being reinfected with Delta, and they're doing very poorly. Now they have to have booster shots or they have to eliminate their green card. So all the things originally promised, people were not patient, people did not wait, and they should have, because now we're seeing the other side. What we're going to do now is we're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to hear from Dr. Mike Yeadon. Now, just so you understand a little bit about him, he's testifying under oath at a tribunal of all these lawyers who are looking to see what's gone wrong with the COVID narrative and how to stop what is wrong from continuing. And they believe that there's been many crimes against humanity. Dr. Yeadon sat at the table of orthodox science for 40 years. He worked for Pfizer for 17 years as one of their chief scientists. He has a background in virology, immunology. He's a heavyweight, published a lot of peer-reviewed journals. And then he found something didn't make sense, and he began to do his homework. And the more he looked, the more concerned he became. And that's what we're finding across the board, like Dr. Cole will be my guest on Labor Day. These are all ultra-orthodox, pro-vaccine people. But when they see something's wrong, their level of integrity does not allow them to say, I'm not going to pay attention. They get very focused. So let's hear what he has to say. You can agree or disagree with him, but why don't his critics now, why don't they invite him on their programs to debate him? Why didn't the New York Times get a whole group of people together who disagree with him, scientists, physicians, from the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, Anthony Fauci, and say, okay, Dr. Yeadon, here's where you're wrong. Let's see how he handles it. He's not afraid of that debate. They are. Why have you seen no debates? None. All you've seen is character assassinations and denials. And by the way, I won't be able to do it today, I don't think, but there is a scientist and physician in India who was helping to monitor all of the people at home getting a COVID kit, a home kit. And in it, they had vitamin C and vitamin D and zinc and selenium and ivermectin and other things. When they all started getting this and using it, the infection and death rate just plummeted more than any other place in all of India. And the World Health Organization noted that, but did not mention ivermectin. New York media noted it, or I think it was New York Times, but didn't mention it was ivermectin. And he says it was the ivermectin. They're doing a full-out attack on ivermectin, saying it has no proof, there's no studies. I shared all the evidence yesterday. It's there. You can go to PubMed and find it for yourself. So if they have all the resources and can't find anything good to say about it and only want to attack it, what could be their motive? Clearly, they're completely biased. And call them out. Now to a break and hearing Dr. Michael Yeadon.
Yes, I thank you for the synopsis, as it were. Yes, I do think the PCR test has been central to the deception. That is, it's been used to create in the minds of the citizens all around the world the idea that there is this severe acute respiratory syndrome virus moving around and making many people ill and killing large numbers of people. And then, of course, there is the what I call the COVID lies, but you could regard them as almost childlike beliefs on the part of the people, that if we would cover our faces or run and hide, stay in our homes, that somehow this would, prevent this virus from moving around. So, yes, I think the PCR test, PCR is a wonderful piece of science. But as its inventor, Nobel Prize winner, Dr. Carrie Mullis pointed out, it was not designed on scale to be any kind of quantitative test. I know there are these pseudo qPCRs or quantitative PCR tests, but they're, when you're doing 10,000 or 100,000 tests a day, as in UK, using amateurs, people who've never worked in a lab before, people who are so inexperienced at working in laboratories that they had two people to a flow hood, that they had to be trained how to use a micropipette, a Gilson pipette. I'd never seen a job called pipette trainer. A friend of mine, who was a very experienced laboratory PCR technician for decades, worked in one of the largest UK private labs, the so-called super labs or lighthouse labs, And he couldn't believe it, that on his first day he was introduced to someone whose job was Pipette Trainer. And he asked her, just to show me what training you would provide. Obviously, he knew how to use a pipette. And it was obvious in the first 30 seconds, she had no idea how to use a Gilson micropipette. And at coffee, he asked her what previous jobs she had had before coming to this very important role. And the answer was supermarket shelf stacker at night. So that's the contempt with which the private companies that are operating on scale, the most important diagnostic test ever in the history of the UK, that's the contempt with which management is choosing its staff. So even if PCR, if done well, might distinguish an infected person from a clinically infected person from a not clinically infected person, in practice, forget about it. They've got graduates who have usually got a science degree but no practical commercial lab experience. They're being supervised by this one example, a person whose last job was stacking shelves in a supermarket and ostensibly training them. And just for a moment, contamination is a major problem in PCR. It's an amplification technique, and at high numbers of cycles, Rainer, as you said, theoretically, you might amplify what was in the sample by 1 trillion fold. So it doesn't take much imagination to believe that a few particles floating in the air could contaminate an entire rack of open tubes, notwithstanding a flow hood. And if you have poor pipetting technique, you easily generate aerosols every single time you empty the pipette tip by depressing a thumb. So the person I spoke to who's done this for decades said, I asked him what he thought the operational false positive rate arising purely from contamination, cross-contamination. I asked him what to estimate a percentage. He said it could be 0.2, it could be 2%, it could be 20%, it could be any number at all. And I asked him, well, presumably they run no negative controls through the entire chain of custody. He said, no, they don't do that. They don't do any negative controls. They just add a plate control right at the end before it goes in the PCR machine. So it's pure and simple fraud, in my country at least, absolute fraud. I don't believe a single set of statistics that arise from UK mass scale PCR testing. That's what I think.
Shall I translate?
It is an absolute fraud the way it was used by the UK, but probably the way it was used the world over.
Yeah, I think so. I'm in an undisclosed Central American country at the moment, and I've spoken to a few people here, and there seems to be pretty much no one with any science or medical knowledge running the country's coronavirus response, as far as I can tell. And from what little I've gathered by repute, the person that is in charge of the health response is widely considered to be a crook. Mm-hmm. So, a little countries have got no chance, and I'm afraid the big countries are the ones that have aggressively rolled out this pseudoscience. It's you've probably heard me speak before many times on what I call the COVID lies. And I just want to point out to people something that I thought it was compelling evidence of an international plan the first time I heard it, which was sometime in March 2020, several scores of countries, the ones that I've managed to check, all discarded their perfectly good pandemic preparedness plans. They all had one, all the reasonably advanced G20 countries all had one. And they all were pretty similar to what WHO had on their website as of 2019. And it never involved things like lockdowns, mask wearing, mass testing of the healthy, restrictions on travel within or between countries at all. And these were pandemic preparedness plans for something at least 10 times more lethal than what has actually happened. In other words, those plans were pretty good. And yet scores of countries simultaneously, as far as I can tell, discarded them. And then they all adopted a new plan. Now, maybe that's fine. Maybe they saw falling man in Wuhan and thought, well, this is worse. We'll have to do it. Let's not use our plan. Let's use a new one. Okay, I could just about buy that. But the thing is, they then adopted precautions, almost all of which were already proven not to be useful. And they all did it, right? Now, if it was just one country then yeah, maybe you've got an influential, fool, arrogant person, and they've driven, you know, the policy. But they all adopted lies, and they all adopted the same lies. Now, I've asked people again and again, can you come up with an explanation that is other than an international plan? Not a single person has managed to do it. But every one of the driving narrative points about this virus are wrong, from the degree of lethality, from the supposed efficacy of masks, and the utility of PCR testing, the absurd idea that people without symptoms of a respiratory illness can nevertheless infect other people, and so it goes on. Every one of them was laughably stupid, and unfortunately it's not funny, because unfortunately it looks like 9 times out of 10 people have believed this lies. But that's my point. It simply doesn't stack up the first time I heard it. And the more the year wore on, the more I realized it wasn't just a PCR fraud, but everything was lies. And I'm afraid nothing has changed. So let me allow you to translate that. But I've got a couple of things I've discovered recently, which are horrifying, and they go a long way towards explaining the peaks of deaths in the UK, at least.
Okay.
Yes, Mike, I believe that.
Okay, that's only one part of his testimony. He's making a challenge. We're going to be playing 5 different parts of that. Mind you, he's being attacked by the very people that for 40 years praised him, rewarded him, and he doesn't care. He says, if I lose everything, I don't care. I'm going to tell the truth. What will happen when enough people say we're going to tell the truth? Oh, and by the way, if you thought the parody we played of the premiere of New South Wales was extreme, quote, interstate travel within Australia is also severely restricted, and the government of South Australia, one of the country's 6 states, developed and is now testing an app as Orwellian as any in the free world to enforce its quarantine rules. People in South Australia will be forced to download an app that combines facial recognition and geolocation. The state will text them at random times, and thereafter they will have 15 minutes to take a picture of their face in the location where they are supposed to be. Should they fail, the local police department will be sent to follow up the person. Quote, we don't tell them how often or when. On a random basis, they will be have to reply within 15 minutes, end quote. Premier Stephen Marshall explained, quote, I think every South Australian should feel pretty proud that we are the national pilot for a home-based quarantine app. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Your thoughts, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. We're going to go to that clip. Because worldwide, everyone in the media, everyone with the same identical talking points are rejecting any other therapy except a failed and toxic therapy that costs $3,000, but a $2 a day therapy like hydroxychloroquine in combination with ivermectin, in combination with azithromycin and zinc, etc., is being denounced as useless. And yet there's hundreds and hundreds of studies, the majority peer-reviewed, showing just the opposite, that it saves lives. And frontline doctors, some frontline doctors have treated thousands of patients without a single patient having to go to the hospital, without a single patient dying. Why don't they count? Why don't their patients count? They should. They don't. So we're going to play you this clip. It's not a long clip, but it's from Trial Site News, a very reputable source, about what's happening in India that is not touched in the United States. Listen to what they have to say about ivermectin.
As we have shared, back on May 12th, Uttar Pradesh's Director General of Medical and Health Services, Dr. Anshul Parikh, led the state's health department through the COVID-19 crisis and added ivermectin to its large-scale prophylactic program, with a focus on close contacts of COVID-19 patients, health workers, and general care of COVID-19 patients, and eventually an aggressive home care program. Now, by May 30th of 2021, we here at Trial Site News shared the incredible turnaround that the public health officials in Uttar Pradesh accomplished using the ivermectin-based home treatment protocol. Now, while the WHO continued to recognize the incredible work ongoing in India, they still omitted the use of ivermectin in their reports. Now, this, of course, led to many asking the question, why would such material information be omitted? So now let's turn to the interview with Dr. Lenny DaCosta. Dr. DaCosta shared that the home medicine kits included ivermectin, doxycycline, zinc, and vitamin C, and in fact reported that a new kit is now offered to kids given the higher infection rates among that particular cohort. Now, touting the incredible turnaround, thanks to the aforementioned move by public health authorities in Uttar Pradesh, Dr. DaCosta shared that the rapid decline of these skyrocketing cases was due to the massive public health program, which involved the free home medicine kits. Dr. DaCosta took the position that the key to the success was the ability of ivermectin to inhibit transmission of the virus, especially among household contacts, which seemed to work incredibly well. Now, Dr. DaCosta also spoke about his state, Goa, which backed off from the protocol for reasons which he claimed were other than health care back on June 20th. He also spoke about Western media censorship and material omission as to what was in fact working in India during the second Delta-triggered crisis. This included the WHO's Dr. Soma Swaminathan's issued warnings about the use of ivermectin, which triggered a series of actions and reactions in India. For example, a group of physicians and lawyers filed lawsuits against the World Health Organization's director and WHO for criminal negligence, among other things. This then created significant pressure within the government as the WHO wields considerable clout. And so, India's research institute, the India Council of Medical Research, or the ICMR, took down its recommendation for ivermectin. But that didn't stop some states, including Uttar Pradesh, from continuing to include the generic antiparasitic drug in its public health protocol targeting SARS-CoV-2. Now, this is because while the central government in India wields power, it does not run medical care at the state level. And so, by June 29th of 2021, with central authorities under pressure from the World Health Organization to take down the ivermectin recommendation, states such as Uttar Pradesh doubled down, even introducing a pediatric protocol given the increased number of younger infections. Now, Dr. DaCosta reported that a majority of physician practices use ivermectin at the local level, including himself, across the states in this vast country. He claimed that the successful containment in the second wave was primarily due to ivermectin, doxycycline, zinc, and vitamin C used early on, meaning right when the first symptoms appear. Now, according to the doctor, early care was the key to success in India, turning around the deadly second Delta variant-triggered wave. And so, the war against COVID-19 continues to rage in India. And as always, we'll keep you posted as the story continues to develop.
So there you're seeing what the New York Times and CNN will not tell you, that the largest, most populated state, or not the largest, but the most populated state, I believe it's over 262 million people, when they were taking the home kit of all those supplements and the drugs, the just crashed down and was one of the safest places in India. Then politics came in, which it does. Big Pharma has a lot at stake here, what will be trillions of dollars, and they want to control everything. And so they put pressure, and lo and behold, no more kits. But then pressure was put back at the local level, and they reintroduced the kits, and once again, the level flatlined. Any real investigative journalist who hadn't been compromised would see that as a headline story. But you're not seeing it as a headline story. Oh, by the way, a new study just out today, and this is from the Ulm University Medical Center. Quote, antiviral activity of plant juices and green tea against SARS-2 COVID and influenza virus in vitro. And then it goes into the abstract. Respiratory viruses initially infect the nasal regions where they amplify, cause symptoms, may also be transmitted to new hosts, preventing initial infection and reducing viral loads upon infection might soothe symptoms, prevent dissemination into the lower airways or transmission to the next individual. And then they go into what they found, the methods, the herbal methods, the green teas, and other vitamin C is in here. and pomegranate juice. Let's see what else. Elderberry juice. Everybody should be taking elderberry juice every day. And then they did the cell cultures, the virus test strains and cultivation. And then it gets down to the results that these were strongly antiviral. So we can do a lot to keep our immune system strong and to kill viruses and therefore help save us. This is in addition, of course, to the medical applications also. So just want to let you know, another study, I didn't see this published anywhere else, but it was. We're going to take some calls now. Let's say hello to Ronald from Long Island. Hi, Ronald, your turn.
Hi, Gary. I just want to say, regarding the social media companies, they were started by young people, presumably idealistic young people. And what happened that now they don't seem to believe in freedom of speech? And none of them have conservative leanings at all. It just doesn't make sense.
Okay, it does make sense. Let's revisit this, Ronald, for a moment and see if this makes sense. For those in this audience, which are probably more than half, who grew up honoring traditional liberal values, the right of a person to have control over their body, my choice, the right to know that the governmental agencies are there to assist those who are least able to help themselves, therefore a strong social safety net, those who care about other countries that cannot any longer sustain a quality of life, so people migrate to the United States, and the liberal is empathetic to that, and also the idea that your government or corporate America would not have control over the choices you make by controlling the media. So it's not about they're against freedom of speech. To the contrary, everyone that I know in the media, of all the major networks, believe in freedom of speech, just their freedom of speech, not yours. And therefore, they have gone to the dark side of censorship, where at one time they would have supported the idea that I don't like what you're saying, I don't even like you, but I absolutely will allow you to say what you need to say, and I can disagree with it. We can have debates. We can challenge the merits of each other. This used to be the hallmark of science. I can remember back in the early 1970s, when I was doing some groundbreaking research at the Institute of Biology, we would come down to a monthly meeting where 16 different department heads were, and I would present something, and they would argue that it was of no value, that's stupid. And you look at them, they smoke, they drank, they had big bellies, they eat garbage. And yet they were trying to tell me, who was doing research that no one else ever done before, and how we could help save lives through our lifestyle behavior, that I was wrong. I didn't like how that felt, because it wasn't just one or two who was against me. It was all of them had different views. But we had a robust debate. And then I was asked by the director, show us the evidence. And it's the evidence, not our opinion, because science should never be about what you believe. Religion can be, life values can be, but science should be about what does the evidence prove in this moment. And so therefore, even though I was frequently outvoted, at the end of the day, if my science showed that something worked, then all their opinions were irrelevant. That doesn't happen today. You do not have people at the New York Times or CNN inviting in different doctors, orthodox mainstream pro-vaccine doctors, board certified, published in peer-reviewed literature, saying, okay, you say that this approach that we're taking is wrong. Prove it. And then they have someone who's there who represents the establishment, and you have an opportunity to present information. Free speech, that's not happening anywhere in media or the government. You'll see panels of five or six people who are attacking, this horse drug that's only good for horses and mocking it, when it's not ivermectin. The fact that veterinarian medicine uses ivermectin on horses, that's not the ivermectin that you're getting when you get a prescription for ivermectin from your doctor. That's a human use. But they don't look at the facts. They don't look at the truth. So therefore, you're stuck with what is an ideological shift. Now, these are not ill-informed people. Let's give them credit. To work at the New York Times or some of these agencies, you generally have to graduate from in journalism or Columbia School of Journalism, one of the most respected journalistic schools in America, or one of the Ivy League schools. You generally are well-connected at the social level. But that doesn't mean that once you see a story that you're going to know how to approach it and where the truth in that story lies. They're told what the truth is, and we know this for a fact because of WikiLeaks is sharing information, and also because whistleblowers talking about at CNN, how the top person at CNN tells everybody this is our agenda. And then everybody starts using the same words. Well, who gives them that agenda? Look at the CIA. Go back and look at the trials, or not the trials, but the hearings in the 1970s. And under those hearings, it was stated under oath, the former head of the CIA, the former head of CBS News, Network News, yeah, the CIA's infiltrated into all these. Well, I happen to know at the time because I was doing an article on it, it was 1,400 CIA plants in the mainstream media. And what it is now, who knows? I don't. But it was. And they don't just pull out and stop something. So you've got to understand that there's an agenda behind what is shared. And especially, you know, you're being propagandized when everybody uses the same words, same descriptions. That's not reporting. That's propagandizing. And that's what the media has become. And yet it wraps itself in liberal media. This has nothing to do with liberal or conservative. Because in the real world, both liberal, traditional liberal views and both traditional conservative views can work together and have. If you care about your family, if you care about your values, if you care about the individual, not just the collective whole and the group, those are traditional conservative values. It's when we start politicizing and then weaponizing what we politicize that you no longer are liberal or conservative. You are a member of a cult. You have a new religion. And you lose the capacity to think outside of that refractory prison that you're in. Thank you very much for your call. Does that make sense to you, by the way?
Yes.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's say hello to Noel from Brooklyn. Hi, Noel. Your turn.
Hey, Gary. I don't know if the engineer showed you on the board. I'd like you to give a protocol for if you're a nurse or a school teacher or somebody being on the subway, a protocol to help you to defend yourself from the shedders of the virus.
Okay, we now know, and it was told to us and everybody rejected it. There was a scientist, a nearly 40-year scientist in virology, and who helped design, he was also a vet, design vaccines. Very bright man. He was a Dutch citizen, and his name was Dr. Bosch. And he said that there's going to be some shedding, and there's going to be some changes in the way the spike protein reacts in the body. Not everybody's body will react the same way, especially if they already have an autoimmune condition. And it was Richard Gale and I who did an analysis, and we came up with 130.5 million Americans have some form of autoimmunity. Therefore, their doctor should be going over their blood chemistry and their immune status with actual studies to show what your immune status is before they got the vaccine. That's not anti-vaccine. That's being pro-good science. It's that simple. If your interest is in saving the patient's life from further suffering, you got to look and take the time that hasn't been done. So now there are some people who are shedding. And so my suggestion is that wherever appropriate, wherever you're going to be in close contact with people, wear either a face guard, which is highly protective, but also an N95 surgical mask, or a better mask than surgical mask, and so that you can get 0.01 of the infective agent, whatever it might be, coming into your body. Just to be conscious that airborne particulate matter that may hold some viral information, that you can become picking it up. Just be conscious of where you're at. Live a good life. But just be conscious. And by the way, this is the way I've lived for a long time. And it makes a big difference. And keep your immune system strong. And we wrote articles. Go to GaryNall.com. Download the article. Share them with people. It gives you everything from PubMed on keeping your immune system strong. By the way, I want to say goodbye to our WBA audience. Remember, we'll be here on Monday with a Dr. Cole for the whole hour. We're going to continue the top of the hour. And also, if you were part of the webinar, we gave out a complete detailed list of the things you can do to protect yourself. We're editing that. I'm so busy right now. It'll be edited in the near future, and then we'll post it. Let's say hello to Edward from Brooklyn. Hi, Edward. Your turn.
Hello. I just want to alert the audience that there's going to be a rally at City Hall, at Union Square Park in New York City at 14th Street on Monday, September 6th at 1 p.m. Against the lockdown. And this is sponsored by Stop the Lockdown New York City.
Good. Okay, Union Square, Monday against the lockdown. Thank you for sharing that, Edward. And Ronald from Long Island. Hi, Ronald. Your turn. Oh, did Ronald? So we've done all the people there. Do I have anyone that I missed there? I don't think. No, good. Okay, thank you all for being focused today. Look, there's a whole lot we don't know. And reasons suggest that we use the best of orthodox medicine that has been proven effective and safe, take the politics, propagandizing, and weaponization out of the equation, and realize that we need new antibody tests to determine if you have been infected. And here's the good news. If you have been infected, then you have a measure of protection that is just terrific, far better than the average person. You know, we have one final clip that will put the highlight on this. Let's go to this woman and take just a minute of what she says. And this is the additional proof. This is a reporter talking about what happens if you've been developing natural immunity. Do we have that?
Bombshell study released last week shows those previously infected with SARS-CoV-2 have natural immunity that offers 13 times more protection against the Delta variant than vaccination alone. The findings are from Tel Aviv. They followed over 700,000 people that were broken up into three different groups. Those who were vaccinated with two doses of Pfizer, those who had recovered from a previous infection, and those who had recovered and received only one dose of the Pfizer vaccine. Now, the study found that those who had recovered from COVID were 13 times less likely to end up reinfected, concluding that natural.
Okay, 13 times is 1,300% less likely to be infected with Delta. Why aren't we telling that to the 100 million plus who've been infected and have survived? That's positive. Now we help build up their immune system beyond that. That's the approach we should be taking that is both science and common sense. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.